So I think about that, and it's like, okay, just
we support you, Gordon.
Yeah. Try to get over there. I did think you had on the governor's office. I think Aaron's going to be doing that. And he said, we really got to have X, Y, and Z. So if you make it into the governor's office, you're 90% of the time, make it out of the back. But if you don't make it in there, you're in trouble.
We'll reconvene here, picking up where we left off before the break. Staff have done their work to try and construct the bones of a motion in light of the one that we have on the floor from Board Member Summers, as to reflect the friendly amendments that we discussed. Board Member Summers, you want to edit the motion?
Should I read it? Does that help?
Go right ahead.
Okay, I move the board support DNR's operating and small force landowner related capital budget requests for inclusion on the governor's budget.
And we recall this motion was seconded by Board Member Little and discussed at some length.
There was just one question that I think we answered, that the geologic hazards and LIDAR is part of the operating budget, so it's clearly included in that. It wasn't clear on the front page of the memo we had, but just make with that clarification.
That's correct to do. They are operating budget requests. Further discussion on the motion? Board Member Storr.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a clarification, maybe. The motion says we're supporting DNR's operating budget. And don't we want to clarify that to be something around forest practices related operating budget?
Forest practices in geology, perhaps.
I mean, I've seen your entire budget subject.
Yeah. Well, you know me well enough.
Trust him.
Hot flight stuff. Board Member Summers, without objection, is that?
That's fine.
Makes sense. Further discussion on the motion?
We're not supporting your pizza delivery.
It's not a lot of refreshments ordered by state agencies in the last 5 years.
That wasn't included in the motion.
Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Abstentions? Thank you very much. We will look for opportunities for board members to continue to have that discussion with those who make the decisions and are interested in hearing from us. Our next item of business is public comments on board manual section 16 regarding unstable slopes. Patricia, have we any papers?
Yes.
Right. There are 15 of you. So you will have 3 minutes apiece. I'm going to, unless there's an objection from any of the board members, I'll just allot as much time as it requires to get through the 15 on the agenda, although the initial time period is 10 minutes. First of those is Scott Swanson.
Chair Everett and board members. My name is Scott Swanson and I'm Vice President of West Fork Timber Company. I provide the following comments for the board's consideration regarding the proposed adoption of the revised Forest Practices Board Manual Section 16 related to steep slopes. First, it is important to point out that West Fork Timber understands the importance of protecting steep slopes, as evidenced by the company's long history of addressing such issues through its voluntary habitat conservation plan obtained by Murray Pacific Corporation in 1993. Our HCP was one of the first of its kind and relied heavily on strong scientific record developed over several years of work on behalf of a team of government and company scientists. After 20 years of implementation, it is safe to say that the work done by the scientific team over several years was critical to ensuring the success of our plan. West Fork appreciates the work of the science team involved in developing the board manual revisions under discussion today. The efforts of this group have advanced our understanding of steep slope issues. However, given the scope this team was requested to pursue, it is clear that more time is needed for this team to consider comments received and to clarify aspects of the board manual that remain unclear to many of us. We recommend that the board not take final action today to adopt the board manual revisions. Instead, we believe the board should establish a reasonable schedule to allow the science team, industry, and other interested stakeholders to continue to revise the board manual to ensure a final version reflects careful analysis and the best available scientific information. We have reviewed the board manual revisions and note many areas of the document that require clarification and editing to ensure the document is not misinterpreted. The document has expanded into areas well beyond the original direction provided by you, the board. As a result, the volume and complexity of material contained in the board manual revision requires careful consideration. We believe the board should delay action on board manual revisions that exceed the original scope and direction of the board. We understand from parties involved in the science team process that certain members of the team possess reservations about the current form of the board manual. The opinions of parties involved in this process are important, and we urge the board to carefully consider the views of these parties prior to taking final action on the board manual revisions. Management of steep slope areas is an extremely important consideration for timber harvest management. On many land ownerships, the process and time required to evaluate these landforms is significant. The current board manual revisions under review are prescriptive and are tantamount to rulemaking. We believe the board did not intend manual revisions to proceed in this direction, and we believe the board should take great care in avoiding creating new rules simply by amending the existing board manual. Washington is a unique place to own and manage forest lands. The Forest and Fish HCP and the Timber Fish and Wildlife process have shown us the importance of collaboration and the use of best scientific information. We are concerned that the current board manual revisions do not reflect these important values, and we urge the board to delay action on approving the board manual revisions in their current form until further work can be done by the science team and other parties on the substance of this document. Thank you.
Thank you. Stephen Bernath.
Chair of the board, board members, staff, and public. I'm Stephen Bernath. I'm the senior forest environmental policy advisor for ecology. I'd like to comment on board manual 16. First, I want to enter into the record. You've been handed the cover memo that we originally put out wasn't included in your record, so I wanted to add that to it. And I just want to compliment the hard work that both the board manual team and DNR staff has done in working on this. It's greatly improved, this second version. Unfortunately, what you have in front of you in your board packet is mostly comments on the first version. And so what I wanted to do in the second page that I provided you is update ecology's comments based on our reading in the second version. Process counts. We understand the significance of moving ahead with this. We support that in its current form. However, as you move forward, I think it would be appropriate in phase two, as outlined in your May meeting, to when you consider run out or delivery, that you expand that mission, if you will, finishing the board manual to look at the whole board manual. I think there's still a lot of clarity needed, and to make sure we have some, there aren't confusing issues associated with that. But I would say it is usable. Our LEG has reviewed it along with myself, and we are supportive of it, but we do think that there is a lot of room for improvement. We don't know why some things are in it and why some things are not in it. I noted several places where I thought delivery needed to be mentioned, but because there has been no conversations with stakeholders on this version, it's unclear why some things are in and some things are out. Anyway, that's what I had to say.
Thank you. Tim McBride.
Good morning, Chair, members of the board. Tim McBride representing Hancock Forest Management. We manage over 700,000 acres of private forest land in the state of Washington. My comments today are verbal. I don't usually write things down, but they're going to provide a little bit of a historical context for you. 10 years ago, I was up here as part of a stakeholder group that was pulled together to revise the Channel Migration Zone Board Manual. I believe that maybe Mr. Lori was only the other person in this room that was also at that meeting. And the point I want to bring up about that, Chairman, is that 10 years ago, the department called together a group of stakeholders to revise the Channel Migration Zone Board Manual. We went and took a 21-page document and turned it into a 68-page document, but that time that it took was over 12 months long. And it was a very diverse group of people that were sitting at that committee and were dedicated to pulling together and creating a document that field practitioners across the state can use and we're very comfortable with. And I think that's what I would ask you to think about today before you go ahead and make a motion or take action on accepting this document, which is taking a 30-some page document and turning it into over 80 pages in only 3 months' time. So please take a step back and add some more time to this because it's very important. And the reason why I say that is because the outcome of what the stakeholder group did 10 years ago was a board manual that was very much readily accepted by all the stakeholders at the time that we brought it up to the Forest Practice Board. And it went through very smoothly and cleanly. And a big part of that process was that the stakeholder group actually took time to take the board manual, go out to the field, look at it, practice it, implement it and see how it worked before they brought it back here and kind of handed a very lengthy tome and said, here you go. So again, I urge you to back up, take a little bit of time, give this board manual back to staff and incorporate a little bit more stakeholder input into this. And then I think we'll have a much better product at the end. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Storm Shop.
Thank you, Chairman Everett, members of the board. I've just provided copies of my written testimony, and I won't be speaking specifically to that, but we'll cover it in general terms. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. Thank you for the hard work that has been accomplished by the department, by the other stakeholders that have been involved in bringing this draft forward to this point. I think that the draft needs some more work, and I urge the board to allow that time for that additional work before adopting the manual as it has been presented right now. Several concerns have come to my attention, certainly, and I think others will speak to them as well. First of all, the manual improperly expands the definition of a rule-identified landform when it includes recharge areas for all landslides, not just the glacial deep-seated landslides, as is in the current rule-identified landform definition. The manual revisions essentially constitute additional rulemaking, but they don't have to go through the rulemaking process, and this is an improper expansion of the way in which rules can and should be adopted. The manual requirements are very costly. They're impractical in many cases, and in the totality of them often may be unnecessary. Doesn't mean that we should not be doing reviews of these areas. It just simply means that it may not be necessary to do all of the tools, and yet the manual suggests that all tools must be utilized in order for a complete application to be processed. And as has been pointed out, the manual, as it is currently presented, lacks consensus among the scientists, among the technical people, the landowners, the department, all those that are involved. So I would hope that it has time to allow the consensus process to work, as has so often been done in this arena. But ask you a question. Is it more important to adopt a manual now or to take the time to do it right? The DNR currently has the authority to require the information necessary to process an application. There's no limitation really on that. Appropriate manual guidance will help landowners and the DNR, and I support that, appropriate manual guidance. I don't think we're quite there yet. If that guidance that comes out now is changing the standards that are required for a complete application or for approval criteria, then it constitutes rulemaking. And that has not been what we've been going through. A manual is guidance, not rulemaking. If it is simply guidance, like it should be, then there should be time to do it right. And that's what I'm asking the board to do, is to consider the time to do it right. And once again, ask the question, is it more important to adopt it now, or is it more important to do it right? Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Scurlock.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Everett, members of the board. My name is Mary Scurlock. I represent the coalition of non-governmental organizations that comprise the Forest and Fish Conservation Caucus to the Timber, Fish, and Wildlife Policy Committee. We urge the board today to adopt the revisions to Board Manual Section 16 as they are proposed by the department in their entirety and without delay. The reasons for action, we believe, are clear and compelling. First, avoiding timber harvest on the groundwater recharge zones feeding glacial and other deep-seated landslides is a matter of life and death. The risks we're avoiding here are really different in kind to some of the other risks that we've dealt with in former board manuals, such as migrating channels of streams, where we're primarily concerned only with fish and wildlife. We think it's imperative that the best available scientific information is used or generated, if not available, to ensure that hazardous landforms are identified as accurately as possible, particularly where public safety is implicated. Adopting this manual is a tangible step that the board can take now, today, to reduce the chance that timber harvest could inadvertently be permitted on a groundwater recharge area, needlessly endangering human life and public resources. Secondly, we believe that the proposed changes represent a significant and needed improvement over the prior guidance, and that despite any omissions or flaws in the way that it reads, that because they are the product of an intensive consultation with a distinguished panel of experts with diverse backgrounds, including some with timber industry backgrounds, and despite the truncated stakeholder review process that was used, the product remains vastly improved over the existing board manual and justifies its adoption. The key change is that the new guidance recognizes there are varying degrees of precision and accuracy provided by various office and field assessment methods to delineate groundwater recharge areas, both glacial and non-glacial. However, what's still missing from DNR's policies is a direct link between the accuracy of delineation methods and decision making. The level of accuracy and confidence in relevant information is critical to DNR's decision-making and approval process and its determination as to whether proposed harvest and related management could potentially decrease the stability of deep-seated landslides. So we actually agree that there are further steps that could be taken and probably taken in rule, but this guidance does not cross that line. Lastly, this important guidance is needed now. We can't control the timing or severity of the upcoming storm season, and climate change science indicates that Washington will be receiving more rain than snow in the Cascade Mountains. But we can improve implementation of our current rules and the policies that seek to avoid increasing the dangers posed by unstable slopes. As the department recognizes, the update of Section 16 is not complete without further attention to how the likelihood and risk associated with delivery potential is assessed. But it is still critical that the guidance completed so far be formally adopted to ensure its immediate use by forest practices applicants and their geotechnical advisors. As further refinements to this guidance are identified, they can still be made during phase two, but to delay implementation of this guidance cannot be justified. Thank you.
Thank you. Peter Goldman.
Again, for the record, Peter Goldman, director of the Washington Forest Law Center and member of the Conservation Caucus. Again, I thank the board for the opportunity to address this extremely important public safety issue on how forest practices can be safely conducted on or near potentially dangerous glacial deep-seated land sites, GDSLs. As my colleague Mary Scurlock testified, the Conservation Caucus urges the board to adopt the extensive revisions to Section 16 of the board manual. But first, our caucus wants to sincerely thank and applaud DNR and the science team who participated in the board manual development for developing this board manual so quickly and so thoroughly. While, for sure, other sections are still under construction, such as the runout path section, this new manual is a major improvement over the existing one, which really is a don't ask, don't tell type of approach to glacial deep-seated landslide. If DNR and landowners faithfully implement this new board manual, the public who live and travel near these land sites will be safer sleeping at night. So thank you, DNR and the team, for revising the board manual under your authority to prescribe the contents of forest practices applications and to classify forest practices. But I must caution the board that while an important step in the right direction, the board manual is not, in and of itself, enough. And there's a really simple reason for that. The Pollution Control Hearings Board, the appeals entity that hears appeals of approved, disapproved, or conditioned forest practices applications, has clearly held, as have courts, that the board manual is only a guidance document. It's not a rule. And we heard my colleague from the timber industry say the same thing. Guidance documents or rules are entirely different. Guidance documents prescribe how DNR must go about making a discretionary decision in the field. For example, what things it must consider in approving forest practices around recharge areas, et cetera, et cetera. But rules, on the other hand, prescribe the specific considerations that the public and the forest landowners have a legal right to expect and enforce on the ground. The board manual, in short, does not provide to the public any assurance of the findings and conclusions that DNR must make when it approves or disapproves an FPA located on or near a GDSL. It only, again, provides guidance on how DNR went about making this decision. The public deserves more. The public needs to know and deserves to know how it will be protected from potentially dangerous forest practices, period. So the board, there is a little ambiguity in what to do next because of the attorney generals. They have not reported back to this board or issued an AGO, an attorney general opinion, on this board's authority. So we understand that the board's hands have been somewhat tied. But eventually, whether it be this board, whether it be policy, the board must develop or refine the rules that carefully define the circumstances under which these forest practices are permissible. And there is a very, very good example of what this rule could look like, and it's in the section of the rules 222.10.030, which applies to the board's CEPA policies when a proposed forest practice triggers CEPA forest practice. And that manual, that regulation is in effect today, and it basically says that it provides that FPAs that are, quote, likely to increase the probability of a mass movement on or near the site, quote, unquote, or, quote, would deliver sediment or debris to a public resource, or, quote, which would threaten public safety, requires an environmental impact statement. Now, again, that is language when an FPA has triggered CEPA. We easily could borrow that language and apply it to the kinds of things that DNR must do in delineating forest practices around glacial deep-seated landslides. So the point is, we already have a lot of useful language in the regs that ultimately could guide the department's decision on these kinds of FPAs. So eventually, we need to hardwire the manual into the rule so that everyone, landowners and citizens, know what the rules are that apply to logging around these very dangerous landforms. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Carl Whitaker.
Good morning, Chair Everett, members of the board. I'm Cara Whitaker. I'm the senior scientist and policy analyst at the Washington Forest Law Center and representing the Conservation Caucus. I'd like to commend the DNR and the qualified expert panel for proposing substantial science-based improvements to the board member. This represents an important step towards achieving the intent of the forest practices rules and greater protection of public safety and public resources. Of particular importance is the new guidance for the assessment and delineation of groundwater recharge areas of glacial deep-seated landslides when the surface topography method for their delineation lacks certainty. The development of a hydrogeologic framework of groundwater flow is necessary to accurately delineate groundwater recharge areas, assess slope stability, and quantify the effects of forest practices on glacial deep-seated landslides with the necessary certainty to protect public and public resources. While the revised board manual directly states the need for subsurface information, it is not sufficiently directive on the need for subsurface information. The overall impression of the board manual is that examination of surface topography is sufficient for the delineation of groundwater recharge areas, and the guidance describing subsurface investigation is characterized as optional. In fact, it is impossible for surface investigation to reveal the subsurface controls of groundwater recharge areas. Regardless of this discrepancy, substantially greater protection of public safety and public resources should result from adherence with the revised board manual. In honor of the 43 men, women, and children who perished in the Oso landslide, please adopt the revisions as proposed by the DNR without delay. Our caucus also supports an expedited timeline of phase two of this process, and we will continue to provide constructive feedback throughout phase two. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris Mendoza.
Good morning, board members, chair. First, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Chris Mendoza, and I'm representing Conservation Caucus as their science representative. And today I'd like, first of all, to thank the science panel that provided the board manual revisions. They did a very thorough job, having attended several of their meetings as an observer, as did a few other stakeholders. I think that they should be commended for the amount of information that they generated and the amount of work they put out in the tight timeline they were under, understanding that DNR had asked just for that. Second, I wanted to speak specifically to the one of the comments that we submitted toward the board manual language, the Conservation Caucus. I think it's in your appendix, but it has different stakeholder comments. But specifically to the development of a risk matrix. I know that there's been the concept of a risk matrix for aquatic resources and public safety is not new. I know I was looking through the old watershed analysis manual from the 90s that actually had something similar. It had a rating system for looking at potential hazard and delivery of debris and sediment to streams and mass wasting. So there's been some of you that were around then. I see board member Summers and I think even Court during the 90s are familiar with that process and some of the tools that were available. Having also served on CEMER co-chair of that committee and still sitting on it, they use a similar method of prioritizing their research by which they look at the potential risk to aquatic resources based on the quantity and quality of information available and supporting different forest practice rules. So that's kind of the background. So what I wanted to draw your attention to was that there's a table in our comments that basically provides an example of what a risk matrix might look like for steepest hill slopes or deep-sea glacial landforms. And essentially what it does is basically takes the information that people that are doing the environmental assessment, foresters or technicians, and then weighs it based on the how good it is, essentially, the quality of it, the amount of it, and then that in turn feeds a decision-making process that looks at essentially if there's any uncertainties left or the level of confidence they have in making a call. Once you have that sort of information, it's a much easier job to make a determination about management. In other words, whether to harvest or not harvest or mitigate or avoid. One thing that that table could be improved by, which we also mentioned in our comments, is the runout path. And that is the phase two section of the board manual that the board is poised to take on. And I think once that's finished, it would be very easy to simply add that portion to a table that essentially uses the quality and quantity of information in making these calls, and then giving appropriate guidance to any forest management activities based on that information. And let's see. And finally, I would just state that the Conservation Caucus stands ready to provide any support necessary to meet those ends if the board decides to go down the risk matrix path. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ken Miller.
Again, Chairman Everett, members of the board, I think you have a copy of my testimony in your packets, but I'm Ken Miller, representing the Washington Farm Forestry Association and hundreds, if not thousands, of small forest landowners across our state. We certainly support the well-intentioned efforts to further protect public safety regarding scientifically predictable landslides due to inappropriate forest practices on certain steep slope conditions. Like industry, the small forest landowners do have concerns, particularly about if the experts are confused and conflicted. Imagine trying to be a small forest landowner trying to understand what's expected. I would bet there's only one or two of you on the board that even comprehend these rules, so the rest of you imagine having 40 or 80 acres and trying to be able to understand these rules. There doesn't appear to be sufficient scientific consensus on the appropriate avoidance strategy, so we urge going slow or at least start with interim changes until greater consensus is achieved. We fear an overreaction or a rush to judgment regarding the Oso tragedy will inappropriately expand the regulatory disincentive to keeping more of our forest land forested. Additionally, I'd like to point out to the board that those small forest landowners with steep slopes are disproportionately impacted by the existing and the new guidance because of their ability to comply appropriately is severely limited by the complexity, which I think you all understand, the geotech costs and availability, and a decision tree that is far more complex and financially risky than our friends in industry. The Small Forest Landowner Advisory Committee is working to better understand the unique obstacles and options available to smalls. Once we better understand the real small forest landowner decision tree, it's likely we'll be coming back seeking some sort of win-win technical support so that we can more reliably comply with potential unstable slope concerns. Thank you very much for keeping the abilities of small forest landowners in mind as you move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Bill Monahan.
Chairman Everett, board members, thank you. Good morning. My name is Bill Monahan. I'm the Washington Resource Unit Leader for Premier. I'm a relative newbie to this state, only a few years under my belt. I mention that because, in transitioning to this state, I had heard a lot about the number of stakeholders and how active stakeholders are in the process. And I guess coming here, I envisioned a battleground environment. What I've found is a mature group of stakeholders that value collaboration. It's exciting for someone coming new. Maybe you take that for granted, but it's extremely exciting. I learned about TFW and forest and fish and the adaptive management process. Those things have at their base a element of collaboration, consensus, and science. Those concepts should be embraced. They really should be guarded as almost precious. In looking at this process, we're looking at with the manual revision, I do agree that the science team's work was a very good progress on the manual. I think there was an attempt to build consensus with stakeholders. That said, we're not there. There is a lack of consensus at this point, stemming mostly from some departure from scope, concern about this leading to rulemaking, concern over a prescriptive nature of the rewrite that would cause unreasonable analysis and perhaps an endless review loop, which we've seen. So in closing, I think that all the stakeholders here have demonstrated desire to follow a collaborative process. It really makes the decision-making much stronger. I think that in this process, the stakeholders have not avoided this. We all want to be a part of this process, so there's no avoidance here. But I think with the lack of consensus, we would recommend the board delay adoption of the proposed manual revisions to allow for a better product. Thank you.
Thank you. John Gold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and other members of the board for the opportunity to appear before you here today. My name is John Gold. I'm representing Sierra Pacific Industries. And based on the volume and diversity of comments we've had and the lack of volume in your coffee cups, I'll try to make my comments brief here. I'm here to offer comments on the draft board manual 16 for unstable slopes, which is before you for consideration this morning. I also would like to recognize the long hours, the thoughtful work of the team of scientists in creating and editing this document on an incredibly short timeline. Sierra Pacific previously provided written testimony to you expressing concern that, one, the scope of the draft manual exceeds your own May board order. Two, the process for developing the draft manual was not consistent with the APA nor with the tenets of the Adaptive Management Program. Three, the draft contains prescriptive elements and substantive changes which exceed the scope of guidance and were concerned maybe in effect an administrative rule. Although DNR staff has worked diligently to address some of the nearly 300 individual comments received from multiple caucuses, and we've heard from a lot of them today, not only including the landowners, ecology, the Conservation Caucus, and the counties, this draft, released only 3 weeks ago, does not seem to have TFW consensus and is not ready for adoption. So our concerns remain valid for the current draft. Some notable specifics I'd draw your attention to. Again, the board motion was to review and amend guidance specific to the identification and delineation of groundwater recharge areas associated with glacial deep-seated landslides. However, without providing scientific justification, the draft manual addresses landforms not currently in rural, such as deep-seated slides and other materials, and groundwater recharge areas of non-glacial slides. Second, the draft manual greatly expands the requirements for analyses and reporting by qualified experts beyond what is already in rule and beyond what we feel is necessary. And more importantly, it doesn't allow the discretion on the part of a licensed professional to determine the appropriate scope of inquiry for the proposal at hand. Third, the draft board manual uses inconsistent language, such as on or around, on or near, adjacent to, which cumulatively expand the spatial scope of qualified expert analysis beyond the class 4 special trigger landforms that are enumerated in rule. Therefore, we urge you to defer adoption of this manual and, equally important, to direct staff to continue to work on those sections of the draft manual specific to groundwater recharge areas associated with glacial deep-seated landslides with input from the TFW caucuses. We feel that rushing to adopt an incomplete work product to meet an arbitrary timeline does not make good public policy. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Kevin Godbrook.
Good morning, Chair Everett, members of the board. My name is Kevin Godbrook. I work for the Weyerhaeuser Company. A couple of comments I'll present today are pretty much the same comments I gave to you last time. Basically, we're quite concerned about the significant deviation from the intent of the board's original motion, primarily around the inappropriate commingling and creep of the groundwater recharge area guidance for glacial deep-seated landslides into other types of landforms. Second, we're quite concerned about, you know, this, in effect, the likelihood that this board manual in written is, in effect, a rule, and we believe that needs to be completely addressed. In addition, since the board manuals came out, there's a couple other key items. Yeah, there's, within the board manual, some strong recommendations for expensive, time-consuming, and in most cases, unnecessary quantitative analysis to potentially address all deep-seated landslides and many other rule-identified landforms. These were not even, you know, part of your initial analysis and don't relate to the, you know, the current tragedy that we're trying to address. And secondly, there's just several sections in here, like board manual to section 7. It's just a general mess. You can't really understand what's being asked of you. So as I've looked at this, those are sort of my policy views. I asked Dr. Susan Shaw, who was a participant in the science team, for a statement, and I'd like to read it from her to you today. She wasn't able to make it. As a member of the board manual rewrite team, I feel that we put together a reasonable, rough first draft given the short time frame. 2 months, however, was wholly inadequate for producing a readable, technically sound document of the caliber generally expected of a board manual. I was not alone in thinking that team members were given insufficient time to finish assigned writing tasks and draft editing. Some of the original writing was done at the end of our last meeting with little opportunity for review and editing. In retrospect, we needed more time to clarify scope and intent, better resolve complex technical issues, address inconclusive scientific knowledge, improve writing clarity, and minimize potential for misinterpretation of draft content and author's intent. She ends by saying, I hope the board will consider extending the time frame for draft revision so that we ultimately wind up with a clear, written, and technically sound document that provides the best possible guidance for field practitioners. In my written testimony, I've also just kind of clipped out some, you know, key places, page where we see some, you know, problems. And this just gives you a general view, and it's about 2.5 pages of just areas where the board manual doesn't make sense, there's incorrect statements, it's technically wrong, and it's, you know, expansive. So, you know, clearly, you know, my testimony is focused on let's get a good product. I don't think there's a need to rush. This board manual isn't ready to be adopted. If you do adopt it and you put it out there, the practitioners are not going to be able to make sense out of this. The DNR Forest Practice Foresters, our geologists, and I have 3 qualified experts in the state that are out doing this stuff, and they can't tell what the kind of expectation is now. And so I think we need to take a step back, think about training, how we would implement something of this size and scope. And I think if we went back to the original board motion, which is what I asked you last time, and I think staff responded to a question from the chair, which was, could we pull out the glacial deep-seated portion associated with groundwater recharge areas and do that quickly? And I think the answer was, yes, we could. Instead, we've chosen a path in which we've expanded this document into the whole rewrite of the board manual, and that's not a quick process. And you're trying to jam a quick process through on a very expansive board manual revision, and it's not ready for adoption. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Karen Terwilliger.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. Again, for the record, my name is Karen Terwilliger. I am the senior forester with the Washington Forest Protection Association, and I'd like to make just a few comments this morning about the board manual. First off, I'd like to thank DNR staff and the experts for putting together a very good rough draft work product. These guys worked extensively over a two-month period to try and put together a product that would be the basis for an excellent rewrite of the board manual. And the work that was done in that was good. It's just not finished yet. We take this issue seriously. In fact, I think all stakeholders in this process have taken the rewrite very seriously. And if you need evidence for that, look at that 400-page file in your manual or in your packets related just to comments on this board manual. So we are very interested and committed to making it right. As you've heard from industry folks and others, there are several major concerns that we have. First, that the board manual as written goes beyond the motion that y'all put forward. Secondly, that there's lack of technical and scientific consensus around the writing of the board manual. Third, it's confusing and needs clarification, particularly in the expansion in Part 6 and 7 related to how the process should work. Fourth, there's an expanded definition of rule-identified landforms, which is inappropriate in the guidance document and needs to go through rulemaking. And fifth, there has not been a discussion about how things would be implemented and what the training is associated with that. That said, I think that all the folks in the industry side of the ledger here feel that time will cure this process, that rewriting and revisions going through a stakeholder process will get it right. And we feel that this board manual, both in terms of public safety and direction to landowners, is too important not to get right. The adaptive management process has a lot of values, and a key value is folks sitting around the table getting the words right, and the words are only part of it. You've got to get the science right, and then you've got to understand how it's going to be implemented on the ground. All of those things need to happen in order for the process to work properly and to move forward. So in closing, I understand the desire and the need to potentially act on a board manual today. And one thing that we would ask, our preference would be that you would defer the approval of this board manual. But if you plan to move forward with a version of the board manual, to adopt it as an interim manual. And then give direction, very strong direction, to DNR and the TFW caucuses to work on revisions to the board manual as they're working through the revisions or the changes for the runoff models. This is an incredibly important document. It's very important to get it right. And we stand committed in the industry to help that process work. Thank you.
Kendra Smith.
Speak from the perspective of a local jurisdiction, from actually my personal experience of writing, implementing, and enforcing codes and trying to put them together and the complexity that goes into it, and also the necessity of making them correct and getting it right because of how hard it is at the end of the line if not right and need to go forward. Like all 14 people in front of me, we can't truly thank the DNR enough for all of their work and the science panel for all of the work and everything they put into this. It was enormous, huge volumes to go through. And you're facing, looking at this, I had Laura nudge me and say, don't forget to tell them, you know, the timing trying to do all of this. And it's just been amazing what's come forward. And even with DNR's response with the second draft, you know, thanking them for taking a look at the comments and moving it forward. But with writing anything like this would be an enormous amount of work. Yeah, you have human nature get involved and you start putting everything down and you're putting it all down and trying to get it all in there and you haven't had time to sift through it and really get to the pertinent information and making sure that there's consistencies and there aren't inaccuracies and that you don't have your scientists not on the same page. And so sometimes it takes stress. The hard part is to get it right and to get it where people can go out there and use it and make it a functioning guidance manual. Because that's really, really important, especially in this case, on this one. So taking the time to do that is imperative to get there. Now, I understand the desire to need to adopt something right away, and truly moving forward with that. Doing it as an interim is something that we have as local jurisdictions done. It's something that's, you know, because of needing to put something forward, it gives the time to come back and make it correct, make the document what it needs to be. You have something that's good, but it should be really good. It's imperative that it's a good working guidance document, that there's not questions whether there's rules involved, whether it's guidance, not questions whether or not the science is in agreement. And if it's done properly, you won't have the confusion and frustrations that would come out of that. And when you have that at the end of the day, then your practitioners, people in the field, DNR staff, everybody is at wit's end and becomes timely, costly, and we're not getting to the end result. So I guess, you know, in hoping to get this making it a very good document, taking the time to make it that way, if not moving forward with an interim ordinance with DRS. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Harry Bell.
Good morning. My name is Harry Bell, and I am here this morning representing the Washington State Society of American Foresters. In a previous life, I led many, I was here in front of your predecessors at a time of similar conflict where we had inadequate science, caucuses were lobbying their board members were all frustrated, the caucuses were all frustrated, and we were having a terrible time. Fast forward 2 years, and I was here in front of your predecessors again, where there was no conflict, there was no stress. We came as all caucuses in consensus and recommended the TFW rules and regulations. It worked. It worked really well, but it wasn't easy. It took 2 years. And so I see you being in a similar situation here. The real issue is you don't have the discussion and debate as a board that needs to happen for a complex issue like this. The DNR does not, or hasn't here, had that discussion and debate to really resolve the issues. You have to involve the stakeholders, not commenting on something that's been developed, but actually developing something that is good. And so the Society of American Foresters very much supports collaborative multi-stakeholder efforts on all lands, not only private land, but on federal and state lands. And we recommend that you revive the TFW process, not in lip service, in reality, remand this back to the DNR with the expectation that caucuses will get together under the rules and guidelines of working together that we use in TFW, and include a lot of field trips. Makes a big difference, maybe hire a facilitator, but give it back to a TFW process with all the stakeholders there for them to work out a board manual that really works for everyone. And so thank you for this comment, period.
Thank you. We will next be joined by Mark Ratliff on DNR staff to have a back and forth exchange here. With the board and Mark Engel. You've heard a number of things in the comment period. I'm sure you have some questions. Mark's got some remarks. Mark, I know you worked hard on those. I'd like you to compress them a little bit since we're running a little bit short on time.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'm Mark Engel. I'm the Assistant Division Manager for Forest Practices. Mark Ratliff is going to give the presentation, and I'll be here for questions afterwards.
Thank you. Morning, members of the board, Chair Mark Ratliff.
Policy Extension Service for Forest Practices.
I'm here to present to you the Board Manual Section 16 and ask that the Board approve 16 as amended. As you know, as Board members know, the current forest practice rules require that no forest practice activity occur on unstable slopes, and that the activity does not further contribute to the movement of a slope, and that public resources are protected and threats to public safety are avoided. The best practices, the technical advisory, the guidance to do that for the situations are included in the Board Manual. I want to touch quickly on forming the group and the review process leading to today. So, true to the main motion, we did assemble a qualified expert group to amend guidance for delineating the groundwater recharge area. The group had expertise in hill slope geology, groundwater science, LIDAR processes, and not only those that wrote a geotech report, but those that also reviewed the report. The document before you today has considerable staff time to make the readability precise, to target the specific audience, and also to incorporate a lot of the comments we did receive from the policy caucuses. Some of the more substantial improvements and amendments I want to touch on. In the introduction, we specifically state that the manual is the technical advisory supplement to the forest practice rules. And this was in response to some of the comments on the earlier draft that there's a clarity to distinguish rule from guidance. And this is also emphasized throughout the documents that the in-depth analysis, recommendations, and tools are just steps, recommended steps, and will depend on the activity and the situation at hand. Understandably, the goal of this manual is to assist users in identifying landform, determining when a further assessment may be needed, and what to provide in the geotech report if that is needed. We wrote this manual to two specific audiences, the general practitioner and the qualified expert. The general practitioner we're thinking of as foresters, engineers, landowners, anyone who does field layout. And then the qualified expert is that individual that we have in rule. Licensed geologist, hydrologist, 3 years experience in the forest. And so this was important. The two different audiences are important because the general practitioner needs to know when they're on a rule identified landform, and the technical directions or methodologies, I should say, to the qualified expert is important because they're the ones that in most cases will be doing the assessment and then moving forward with a report if the activity warrants that. As we begin the discussions and create an outline to improve on the manual, the group agreed that to better inform on the geology and hydrology of groundwater recharge areas in glacial deep sea landslides, the reader needed to gain an understanding of the larger picture and influence of groundwater recharge on all landslides. Thus, the amended material is what the group thought best to inform on. And the strength of the group was that they did do this as far as their profession. They added a section on geology provinces. If you're going to need to understand the underlying material that you're in, then having a discussion on where glacial extent in Washington was important. They expanded the groundwater recharge section to better describe how groundwater can affect landslides. Because the groundwater can influence slope and stability, it was their opinion that a discussion on the influence of groundwater was critical to understanding for all deep sea landslides, not just glacial deep sea landslides. And in some cases, the process used for delineating the groundwater of a glacial deep side can also be applied to other deep sea landslides. A proposed activity may influence the recharge of a landslide in non-glacial materials. When it is found that groundwater could cause further movement of the landslide,
that activity may be classed as a Class 4 special. Not because it is specifically a groundwater recharge area, but because that activity is found to influence the groundwater, which in turn has a potential to influence the movement. And when that activity has the potential to harm the environment, that is classed under a Class 4 special under the Category E, which is a catch-all under the landform rule. In Part 6, the overall overview of office and field reviews, we provide recommended office and field steps and pathways. We provide the direction for the general practitioner to seek further assistance if they're on a rule-identified landform or when they don't have the necessary information to do that assessment. And then the qualified expert portion in 6 outlines a process for the geologist to consider, such as subsurface investigations when the initial topography recharge area delineation lacks certainty. And we know that LIDAR is a very valuable tool, so we brought in a discussion on LIDAR and then how LIDAR is used to identify these features. In Part 7, landslide activity assessment, we provide a discussion for the qualified expert on assessing the landslide's threat and options to consider if further analysis is needed and to move on so that they have all the information to make a rational conclusion. For instance, the topography delineation method for a groundwater recharge area is the initial starting point and at times may be the appropriate method. For instance, it's a dormant slide and public resources or threats do not exist. When indicators point to recent movement or resources exist in close proximity, the topography method may be adequate. The topography method may not be adequate. The manual provides direction for what the qualified expert may need to consider during that assessment. The assessment will lead to better understanding of the threat of the landform and the risk to resources, which ultimately will lead to DNR's decision. Since some of the participants on the expert panel conduct field reviews and write geotech reports, and one actually approves those or reviews those reports, the expert group considered some of the questions that would lead into a geotech report in 7.5. And then Part 8, geotech reports. In some cases, this is the end of the process, but not all assessments will lead to a geotech report. And DNR will base the evaluation of the proposed forest activity on whether the landowner, through a general practitioner, qualified expert, has provided the necessary tools and the necessary information for DNR to use to make a decision on the FPA. DNR at any time can ask for more information to classify the FPA, and this is clarified in the rule proposal to be presented later to you. Board Manual 16, as amended, is designed to help the landowner and the qualified expert provide the necessary information again to DNR to make that decision. Finally, there's a wide range of resources out there, data, technical surveys that the group thought would be best to include in the appendices, and so the appendices has a big list of mapping the survey data, LIDAR acquisition, and additional literature to review if that's needed. And I also might add that what we brought into the appendices was a policy recommendation in their memo as well. In conclusion, the amended manual provides improved technical guidance to accurately identify unstable landforms and assess the influence an activity may have on the landform. It provides pathways for success during the office review and remote sensing phase and during the field assessment for identifying various features. And it provides the information users need to evaluate when planning forest practice activities so that DNR is confident that we have all the information needed to make our decision and that public resources are protected and threats to public safety are avoided. For these reasons, staff recommends that the board approve Section 16 as amended.
Thank you. Thanks, Mark. Questions from board members?
Just board members, we heard in the comments that there was a sense that all tools must be utilized everywhere. That was one of the comments by Norm. Is that the case, or is this discretionary for the field practitioner to apply what they deem as applicable for that site?
Can you clarify when you say all tools?
Well, that was the comment that was made. All tools must be utilized. In other words, you have to do everything in the manual in every potentially sensitive site.
No, that's not our intent. We provide, to the general practitioner, we provide tools what they may need to assess a site. And then if they don't have the information or it's to some degree outside of their expertise, then we lead them to further investigate or get assistance from a qualified expert. But also the tools we provide for the qualified expert, the recommended steps, the recommended methodologies, if they're certain that they have all the information for a landform, that process may stop with simple FPA. But if they don't have all the information or it leads to potential harm on the environment, then we do provide pathways and off-ramps to consider further investigations. They're not requirements.
Thank you.
Other questions? Board Member Lloyd.
Thank you both. We all heard it here many times, people thanking DNR and your leadership, Mark, on pulling this together in short order. I think it's just worth acknowledging that, you know, everybody's very careful to say it because it was a very real, difficult effort. We've had a couple ideas here on how to move forward with a document that I think has some substantial improvements, provides an immediate benefit, but isn't complete. We've seen, we know there are opportunities for improving this chapter, and so we may be looking at that down the road, but also we have right up next, and Mark, this is maybe a question for you on the next phase of board manual development that we were looking at on this subject, having to do with runout and potential for delivery. Could you describe that piece that's ahead of us a little bit so we can kind of be thinking about whether there might be opportunities for improving this chapter as a whole as we take a look at that phase two?
So phase two, we haven't started. And that is to be the run out the delivery potential of these of landslides and other features. But it's, you know, really to the board's discretion if we open more of that specific call.
So what time frame? Excuse me. What sort of time frame were you thinking for delivery potential?
Oh, I don't have anything on the calendar. And I'm still getting responses from the policy caucuses of who that player may be for that stakeholder group. So it's very in the infancy stages at this point.
I think the question was if the scope is limited to, if I may.
Thank you.
If the scope is limited to just the runoff potential issues, how long might that take to complete in our current estimation, and how long might it take to complete a runout module plus some additional stakeholder time on the issues people have expressed in the comment period today on the current draft?
I was prepared to answer for the phase two as directed by the board and in this motion. If it were to just concentrate on that, and again, first we have initiated the traditional board manual development process where we've contacted the policy leads and we're asking each caucus to nominate individuals who will help us or assist staff in the development of this next phase. If we were to only concentrate on that phase, a May development could be met, however, with additional time needed to clarify, look at the language, I guess rework parts that may be confusing to folks. In addition to the runout phase, August is a more realistic deadline. And with that, I'd say that we are patterning this after the development of Board Manual Section 5, which was the Forest Practice Hydraulic Project Board Manual. And that took, I believe, 10 months, meeting every other week. So we're looking at, again, a very aggressive timeline where every 2 weeks the group would convene and continue to work on the manual.
Other questions? Board members,
So I have a couple process questions, and I think this is going to sort of the general flavor of some of the public comments we heard, and I just wanted to make sure that there was clarity from the perspective of, you know, what DNR and the board has the authority to do in terms of a board manual versus the requirements of going through adaptive management and requiring consensus. I heard some suggestions that the authority process wasn't followed or broken, and so I wanted some clarification on that. And I think just from a comment perspective, I wanted to remind ourselves and stakeholders that the board has wanted to get some things into place to improve the process as much as possible in a timely manner. And we had our first big meeting last May. This is November. And I know that this is an enormous amount of technical work to get done quickly, but from a real world perspective, November is a lot of months since May, and we're heading into winter. I think that to the extent to which we can remember the specific parameters about this issue, and that this isn't the normal board manual development process, and this isn't sort of a normal circumstance. So I think the expectation of some patience that things won't be perfect, but it was our desire as a board to get things going quickly. This was our direction to do this as expediently as possible. And I feel like me and our staff and the science panel did that. And so A, I want to express appreciation, and B, if there's some upset or confusion or all that patience is taken to work that stuff out, but it's done in the context of, as we implement this and figure out the bumps on the road. So, but back to the first question, just a clarifying statement about, to Mark Engel, board manual doesn't require, technically, legally, does not require consensus, right? It is something that DNR can develop, and it's something the board can direct, and it's something the board needs to vote on. It doesn't require consensus through TFW policy. Is that correct?
It's quite complicated how the rules have been constructed. The direction to the board for the board manual is a specific rule in Chapter 12. It's the whole manual. And that does state that the DNR shall develop the board manual sections in consultation with stakeholders, and it does list the traditional stakeholders, which we will consult, plus others that show interest. Also in Chapter 12, and in 045, it outlines the adaptive management process, and for any development of guidance pertaining to aquatic resources, which is specific to the Course and Fish Report and the HCP, that we need to consult with adaptive management players, specifically policy. And traditionally we do, again, the process, we approach the policy leads, we ask them to nominate participants in the stakeholder group. Those individuals serve as the voice of their particular caucus. There is an expectation that as the manual is being developed, that they go talk to their caucus, and that when they come back, they're reflecting the entire caucus, not just themselves. We also then traditionally do take manuals before policy and for a vote. Now, again, and I'll differ a little bit with Tim McBride in the CMZ manual, which I was intimately involved with, and board member Lori probably remembers that We did bring a recommendation to the board, however, it was not a complete consensus product. The board did consider the comments from those who were not in total agreement with the board member before they approved it.
Other questions for staff? Thank you, gentlemen. As the board moves toward its consideration of action on this item, I'd like to begin the deliberations by saying that I appreciate all of the work that the two of you have done, and Gretchen has also done on DMR staff. The board certainly appreciates the complexity of the issue, the depth of the issue, the subject matter is challenging. And to pull it together in the length of time that you have was nothing short of miraculous. So you have our thanks, and as you heard from all the public comments, you have the thanks of all the folks out there in the world who've been helping with this. For my own part, I'm not willing to delay action on the board manual. I know that it's important and valuable for us to go through the stakeholder process. I think we should do that, but I think we should do that in a manner that adopts this manual as an interim product, that we prescribe the time that we expect staff and our adaptive management stakeholders to engage in both improvements to the current draft that we have before us and the completion of the second phase of our direction for May regarding landslide runout. And I think we should set a time frame on that for the August board meeting and obtain interim progress reports from the staff in the intervening meetings. But I think the balance weighs in favor of moving ahead with what is excellent guidance that staff have developed for us. I think we will, in so doing, commit ourselves to continuing to improve it. But I think that the balance weighs in favor of adopting the manual today. And so, by way of beginning our deliberations, I make a motion to that effect. Hoping that all the cords are connected as it actually comes up on the screen. So in other words, I move the Forest Practice Board approve as interim the amended Board Manual Section 16 guidelines for evaluating potentially unstable slopes and landforms. I further move the board allow staff to make minor spelling and grammatical corrections if necessary prior to the distribution of the interim manual. I further move Forest Practice Board direct staff to convene a stakeholder process to complete revisions of the interim Board Manual Section 16 and to complete guidance specific to assessing delivery potential as directed in the second phase of the board's May 2014 motion. I further move to direct staff to provide a final board manual section 16 board approval at the August 11, 2015 meeting with progress reports at the February 10th, 2015 and May 12th, 2015 meetings.
I second the motion.
Board Member Lori seconds. Motion has been made and seconded. Discussion on the motion. Board Member Summers.
Good, thank you. I'll support the motion. I have a couple questions, but in listening to the comments, I think many of the concerns we heard were about scope and process. And personally, I think when we were discussing this in the spring, the language about glacially deep seated was discussed, but I think we also talked about, you know, convening a team, a science team. And I'm personally more comfortable leaving it to the scientists to tell us what's appropriate when we're looking at these issues in the manual. And if there are issues of hydrology and influences of forestry on deep-seated of any type are appropriate, then they should be in the manual. So I support that. I was present at the initiation of the TFW process and went through the whole thing with several people in this room. And the concept of adaptive management was one where we would, it was much looser back then. We didn't have a program or staff or anything, but it was a concept that we try new things, let science guide us, try them, assess how they're working, and then come back and adapt. And, you know, particularly with these rules, they may be rough, there may be some confusion, but that's something we can, in phase two and beyond, respond to it. That's part of the adaptive management process as it was originally conceived, and I think supporting additional work in phase two and cleaning up the language, seeing how this works, I think is totally within the spirit of adaptive management of TFW, involving all the stakeholders. So I'll support this. I I guess I would ask the intent of the motion states that these are interim guidelines, and but I assume that if we adopt them today, they are in place until we revise them.
They are in effect the moment that they're issued in final form. So yes, and that would take. I'm sure that spelling and grammar corrections are already on the docket. And what's the expected time frame for issuance of the interim, the effective date of the interim?
The effective date of the interim would be today, I assume. But when we get it posted to the web, I would ask for 2 weeks.
Okay. So essentially effective immediately.
Until then. Okay. And just one last comment on the issue of what was the issue? rule versus guidance. I think the language in the book, the board manual, clearly says these are guidance, and the manual's guidance. It always has been. It always will be. And I think that's adequately covered, and I think this will be understood by both the board and those that will be implementing this. So that I think base has been covered. So I'll support the motion.
Thank you, Board Member Summers. Another discussion on the motion. Board Member Stanley.
We've been kind of weighing this, like we're building a house, framing's done, siding's on, roof's on, not quite finished yet. We're living in a leaky rental, and we have to decide whether we stay in the rental and finish it, or move in and finish it, or move in and live in it. This seems like a good way through the process. I know you guys have worked really hard on it. I think one of the risks is the DNR working with landowners on making sure that we can implement it in the field during this interim period, and that it works, that it's clear. And I think as we go through this interim process, it'll be important to glean the lessons we learned from the field so we make this a better manual going forward.
Thank you, Board Member Stanley. Other discussion on the motion? Hearing none, I call the question. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. Board members will forgive me for not managing our time a bit more efficiently, but we are a fair bit behind schedule, so what I propose that we do is we break for lunch just a bit early. We come back at 12:45 and proceed with TFW Policy Committee recommendations on state slopes. So without objection, we'll see you here at 15 minutes.